This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. It's okay to talk about bullying today and the negative impact it can have on children as they grow up. Back in 1996, that was not the case. That's when Jamie Nabuzny sued the Ashland School District in northern Wisconsin for ignoring the bullying he was subjected to in middle and high school. He won the lawsuit, helping to hold school administrators more accountable for providing a safe education for every student. Bullying is still a major issue in schools, but because of stories and the work of people like Nabuzny, many more students have the tools to fight bullying when they encounter it. Nabuzny recently spoke at UW La Crosse. I talked with him about his story, and later, we're joined by Will Van Rosenbeek, director of the UW La Crosse Pride Center. He weighs in on what's being done to combat bullying locally.
For me, the harassment started in seventh grade, and like for most kids, it started with verbal harassment. Kids were calling me fag, queer, those types of things. And the harassment escalated when the administrators chose to do nothing. My middle school principal said things like, boys will be boys. If I was going to be openly gay, I had to expect this kind of stuff. And whenever anybody gives kind of that green light that what's happening is okay when it's verbal harassment, it obviously will escalate, because the further you dehumanize someone and push them in that direction, the easier it is to do worse and worse things. And so the violence escalated throughout my middle and high school until the last beating that actually put me in the hospital and required me to have surgery.
It got to that point.
Absolutely. I've been hospitalized 7 times because of the harassment and physical violence that's happened to me.
And these are children that you grew up with, classmates of yours, and I'm assuming maybe the same people all along those years that were doing the bullying?
Mostly it was the same people that were harassing me, especially in junior high and high school. I didn't really have that many issues in grade school, but I wasn't in Ashland in grade school. My family had moved around a lot when I was young.
So eventually you decided to sue the school administration. Can you talk about that and why it was so groundbreaking for its time?
Originally, I had decided to bring a lawsuit against my school district, and a local attorney in Minneapolis actually had brought the case, and it was thrown out of federal court for lack of precedent, which is why people bring cases to begin with, but that's besides the point. And the case only continued because Lambda Legal out of New York took on the appeal, and we won the appeal, which let us have the right to go to trial. And then eventually we had a jury decision that came down that the 3 principals of my school were found guilty of discriminating against me and not protecting me from harassment. And it was groundbreaking because it was the first time that a court had said that a school was liable for what happened to students in school. So it was probably assumed by most people that schools were there to protect kids. But in reality, the law said nothing about schools protecting kids. And my case established for the first time that schools had to protect students from harassment. And even though, even if they're gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender, they still have to protect them, and they have that same responsibility.
And how old were you when you decided that you'd move forward with this lawsuit?
When the lawsuit began, I was 17 years old, and it was 1993, and the lawsuit actually concluded pretty quickly, and it was 96 when the trial happened.
And then were you able to sue based on the one incident that sent you to the hospital, or was it every action that happened over your childhood?
My lawsuit was a cumulative of all of the harassment that started in the 7th grade, actually, and went through the 11th grade when I left.
Since that lawsuit, and since they established that children do deserve safe school environments, have things changed within school districts, not only in Ashland, not only in Wisconsin, but across the country?
Some places have changed, and some places have changed dramatically. I mean, I'm amazed as I travel around and I see schools have gay-straight alliances in middle schools with 50 kids. And so there's a lot of places where things have changed, but unfortunately, there's a lot of places where things have not changed as well.
And can you talk about that? I mean, places that haven't changed, what are they not doing?
I think that it's still similar to what happened to me, is that administrators decide because of their own personal biases and bigotries about homosexuality and gender identity that they will not choose to protect the students who are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. And depending on the severity and depending on the environment, it has been to the extreme that happened to me. There was a young man that contacted me who grew up in Oklahoma, and he's now a senior in school. But when he contacted me, his mom and him had left the small town because he'd gotten harassed throughout his whole school career, middle school or grade school, middle school, and high school. And the last beating that he suffered, kids actually put rocks in plastic bags and beat him with it. He had a concussion. He had the bone around his eye socket was broken, lots of cuts, bruises, and he was in the hospital for 3 days. And at that point, his mom knew that they would kill him if she let him go back back to the school. So she chose to leave her husband, who wasn't willing to leave, and take him and move to Fort Worth, Texas, where she actually read in the newspaper that there was a gay-straight alliance there and felt he would be safe. And so there's absolutely things still happening like what happened to me. And even, you know, a lot of people say, well, it happens to me, but it was just verbal. It wasn't that bad. Well, I'll tell you, the verbal harassment is much more damaging, and the long-term damage from that is much more severe than the physical. I don't know. I can't remember what it was like to be physically beaten, but I remember to this day the words they called me and how I felt from those words.
As you said, you know, administrators gave the excuse, kids will be kids, boys will be boys, but, I mean, that's not an excuse. And do you think people have learned or are thinking about that more?
I think administrators are definitely aware of the issue of bullying and are choosing, hopefully, to address it. And, you know, and I think most people get into education because they care about kids and they want kids to learn and be safe. Unfortunately, there's people that are in education maybe not for the right reasons, or that are in education but only feel like that protection or that education should go to specific children. And it's not just GLBT kids. I mean, there's other kids. My personal experience in my school was we're right next to a reservation. And my middle school principal had a huge issue with the Native American kids. And there was actually at one point money that was to be donated for a Native American cultural center in my middle school. And she rejected it because there was no white cultural center. I mean, that was her actual reasoning for it. And when you've got kids that are, you know, have high poverty rates, high rates of depression, suicide, drug and alcohol abuse, and you don't want to include them in the conversation, and you don't want to have a cultural center to let them know, not just let them know kind of their roots, but let the rest of the school understand where these kids come from and what kind of background they have. It was really sad. And so it wasn't, like I said, for me, it was the issue that I was gay. But for other students, she just decided that there was only certain kids worthy of protection or worthy of the education that she wanted to give.
And you've taken your experience and this lawsuit, and you're traveling to different school districts just to talk with kids about your life and about bullying. Why did you first decide to start doing that?
Well, I was approached to make the film. It was about 3 years ago.
The film Bullied.
The film Bullied, correct. And originally, it took me a little while to say yes because I had established myself in a very different place. I was working for Wells Fargo, and for a long time, I was tired of being the kid who got beat up from Wisconsin. I wanted to prove myself in a different way. And then, you know, I knew that things were still not great. I knew that things hadn't changed in a lot of places, and I wanted to make the film in a way to help those kids that were still being bullied. And it was interesting because once the film came out and I started getting public speaking requests and I started, you know, speaking publicly, I realized that it really wasn't the kids who were being bullied that I wanted to reach, and it wasn't the kids who were doing the bullying. It was the bystanders. You know, most of the kids in schools are not being bullied. They're not the bullies, but they're the kids sitting there watching this and wishing it was different. And I know for me, most of the apologies I've received were from those kids who felt guilty that they didn't do anything. And my message to kids is that they not only have an ability, but they have a responsibility to stand up when things are happening. That if they're standing by silently and not doing anything when other kids are harassing and bullying other kids, they're just as responsible for that harassment as the kids doing the bullying.
So when you give a presentation to middle school students, to high mm-hmm. school students, talking to younger people can't always be easy. What do you say to them? How do you convince them that even just being an innocent bystander isn't acceptable?
What I do in my school presentations is they see the film Bullied, and I think they get where I'm coming from. But then I ask them questions like, why do you think students bully other students? And I ask them if there's a difference between somebody saying that's so gay, for example, and calling somebody a faggot. And I get them to think about these issues in a little bit different way. And then I let them know that they really are the only ones that have anything to do with this. I don't think we can pass federal laws, we can pass state laws, we can pass all the policies we want. We can do all of these things, but unless students own this issue and decide they want to tackle this issue, schools will not be safe for kids, period. And I think they get that. I mean, and one of the things people always say to me is kids never pay that much attention. They're never that quiet. They're never that respectful. But this is an issue that affects kids' lives every single day. And they get the issue and they want to know what to do. They want to know how to handle this. And so I give suggestions on dealing with harassment. I give suggestions on being going from being a bystander to an upstander and standing up when things are happening. But also giving examples of kids who have changed their whole schools because of one kid deciding they're going to make a difference and change things. Because I don't think kids get that. I think kids feel powerless a lot of times in these situations.
Will Van Rosenbeek, can you talk about the importance of having a speaker like Jamie visit area schools and, I mean, not just dealing with LGBTQ issues, but just bullying in general?
I think that the last piece that he talked about was, you know, getting people to see the need to, you know, be an upstander and to talk and to interrupt and to, you know, get at some of these, you know, issues that are happening is the big piece. Like I say, a lot of students come to college who have seen a lot of things happen in their schools or in their neighborhoods and stuff like that and agreed that it wasn't right or they didn't like it but didn't know what to do. And so they come to college and the same thing happens. They're living in the residence hall and, you know, one of their neighbors starts saying something negative about somebody on the floor. And they don't agree with it, but they don't know what to do. And so instead of doing something, they stay silent. And so even on campus, that's one of the things we try to educate people about that as the bystander, you have a responsibility to do something. And if you do nothing, nobody knows how you feel internally. So you look like you agree with the person that's saying the negative things, even though you don't. I mean, I don't know that, so I think, well, you didn't say anything, you must feel the same way. You know, a lot of times students are like, oh, I guess I have to. But I think the bullying issue, and I think the time frame that the movie came out was right around the time that there was a lot of LGBT suicides. And for all the years that students have been bullied, I think, you know, we're starting to really see that the bullying has escalated. You know, the violence has escalated to young people. Now you have, you know, cyberbullying that can happen, and that is taking everything a whole nother level. I mean, not only do you have to wait, you don't have to wait for word to get around the entire school. I mean, with one hit of a button, hundreds of people, thousands of people can know something about you that may or may not be true. And, you know, I think it's all, you know, been kind of raised to a new level and you know, that we're not giving young people really any more skills in regards to dealing with conflict, how to deal, you know, in a good way with conflict, how to address some of these issues. And as adults, we're not very good role models. I mean, all you have to do is look at whenever there's an election. I mean, we are doing that, you know, we pay to have those kind of commercials on television. People are backstabbing people all the time. And so, you know, I think it's something that affects almost everybody. Everybody's been picked on or bullied at some point, and they know how that feels, and it's not good, and they've also been a bystander. So I think this issue, it needs to be addressed, and there's a lot of young people that are standing up, you know, agreeing and saying this is wrong and trying to get things started in schools, and, you know, really they're the leaders in this movement, and it's the adults that are kind of hesitant to do anything or say anything. And I think, you know, when it comes to LGBT issues, it's always been students that have been raising the issue, and it's the adults that have been afraid. And in many schools, you know, it's not okay to even talk about LGBT issues. And, you know, how do you do that when you know you have LGBT students or the students in the school know LGBT people or they have family members that are, but they're not allowed to talk about it? You know, we need to kind of get our head out of the sand because avoiding it is not the answer either.
And you're listening to Newsmakers. My guests today are Jamie Nabuzny. He's a safe school advocate. And he's joined by Will Van Rosenbeek, who's the director of the UWL Pride Center. Jamie, you've traveled around to many school districts in Wisconsin. Are you impressed when one does call you and does reach out to you and asks you to come talk with the students? Do you think maybe school districts in the area are becoming to be more forward-thinking in regards to bullying or LGBTQ issues?
I think they're being forced to deal with the issue of,
really?
Of bullying and harassment, and particularly about LGBT issues. And I think part of the reason is that kids are making them deal with this. I've been in schools where kids actually have a meeting with the principal and say, these are the issues that are happening in our school. These are the teachers that are standing by and letting this stuff happen to us. These are the teachers that are actually hostily saying things about gay and lesbians in their classrooms, and we want it to stop. And principals sometimes are caught off guard, but a lot of times they want to do the right thing. They're just not aware of these things. And bringing them that awareness, a lot of – I mean, I met one of the principals, and I won't say what school, who said to me he really appreciated me coming in because it's given him a whole different way of looking at this. Like, he didn't realize how bad the problems were in his school. He said his kids don't tell him. Like, he hears about isolated incidents, but he didn't realize how large of a problem this was until my presentation. And so I think that schools are paying more attention, and I think part of the reason – I do think there has been a shift in the last 20 years since everything that happened to me. And the big shift has been – When I was in school, politicians weren't discussing gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender rights. We weren't having conversations in our churches. We weren't having conversations in our homes typically about these issues. And now they're everywhere. Everywhere I go, everywhere I turn, every time I turn the radio on, the TV on, I'm hearing people debate whether or not I have the right to exist, whether I have the right to marry, whether I should have the right to have children. And I think that this is carrying over into the school. We're asking kids to go to school and be respectful of each other, and as adults, we're not being very respectful. And ultimately, this comes down to an environmental issue. Kids aren't going to school and learning how to be bigots. They're learning how to be bigots, and then they're going to school, and schools are having to deal with this issue. And because younger and younger kids are coming out, schools are dealing with these issues, and they're saying, wait a minute, we are a public school. We have to educate all of our kids. We have to figure out how to do it in a way that's respectful to everybody, that everybody, you know, can move forward and on this issue, and that kids can ultimately be safe and learn, because that's what they're in school to do. And I think that's why schools are taking this issue. And I will be honest, I'm surprised at how much opportunity I'm getting in rural areas. I've spent a lot of time in southwestern Wisconsin here, not what I would have expected when I started this. But I think it's great, and I think the fact that schools should be applauded for taking this issue head on and saying, we're going to deal with this because this is reality.
And I'm assuming you get feedback from maybe students or other administrators. You talked about the one principal. What other feedback do you get after you've visited? Do you keep up with the schools and do you find out if things are getting better?
The best thing about what I'm doing now is Facebook, I'll be honest. I used to go to schools when I would speak, you know, 12 years ago, and I would leave and I'd never know what the impact was. I'd never know if things changed. And now I get messages the same day. I'm sure if I turned on Facebook right now, I'd have probably 40 messages from kids who heard me speak today in the schools. And by this evening, it'll probably be 100. And then tomorrow, I'll probably have another 100. And I think it's a wonderful opportunity for me to keep track of things and then follow up. And I hear things all the time like that, you know, kids are paying more attention to this. And typically, it's right after I spoke that kids are, you know, standing up. But I think it has a long-term effect as well. I hear from students who I spoke at their schools last year and how much better things are, how much more the teachers are taking this seriously or the principals. And so I do think that it works, but bringing a speaker in for a one-time thing isn't enough. The schools need to have ongoing dialogue. The kids need to be involved in that dialogue. Kids know who's being bullied, who's doing it, where it's happening, when it's happening, and how it's happening. Most people in schools, teachers, administrators, guidance counselors, have pieces of that puzzle. And if you want to solve the issue, you need all those pieces together. And then you need input from the kids who are on the front lines, who know what's happening. One school that I visited, their kids decided that they were going to monitor their Facebook accounts of all of the kids in the school and to reduce cyberbullying after there was a young woman who killed herself. And it came out afterwards, there was a lot of cyberbullying, and a lot of the teachers were, you know, thought this wasn't going to work. They didn't have faith in this. And these kids single-handedly got on Facebook, monitored their classmates, what they were saying. And not only did they reduce the bullying and harassment, but negativity in general. Kids say things all the time like, I'm stupid, or I'm really fat, or whatever the case may be. And then these kids would say, no, you're not. You know, you're one of the smartest kids in the school. What are you talking about? And that kind of impact, kids can change things. But I don't think if you put 100 teachers in a room and said, how are we going to stop cyberbullying, they wouldn't have had a clue. And half of them couldn't have monitored Facebook if you asked them to. You know, they wouldn't have an account. They wouldn't know how to do it. But kids know these answers, and they are out there changing things. They're out there making their schools a better place.
And when you said they've been monitoring, is that how they would monitor, is through positive reinforcement?
Absolutely. I asked them, I said, well, are you going to report everything to the principal? And they said, no, we're going to take care of it. When somebody harasses somebody, we're going to say, that's not okay. We're going to report it to Facebook, and we're going to stop it right there. And I was amazed by that. And I also was amazed by the fact that it worked. I mean, I ended up following up with the guidance counselor a few weeks later, and she said it's been amazing that a lot of schools refer to Monday morning as Cyber Monday, because all of the stuff that happens over the internet all weekend long spills over into the school, and the school then has to deal with all these issues on Monday morning. And she said Monday mornings are now filled with learning again, instead of having to deal with all of these issues and all these crises that develop from what happens on the internet. That's a huge change.
Will, I'm wondering if you can talk about how well maybe the La Crosse area has dealt with educating on bullying and also on LGBTQ issues.
The La Crosse area is kind of unique. You know, the university has had an LGBT center for quite a long time. In fact, the university was very much kind of equal to Madison and Milwaukee for a long time. And those three schools kind of have led UW system in regards to what is What are some best practices for working with LGBT students and faculty and staff? And I think, you know, that also spills over into the city. You know, we've had a Galaxy program, which is a program for LGBTQ youth that has been around for a long time, much longer than, you know, some of the whole Gay Straight Alliance movement. I mean, this kind of, you know, predates some of that. And so, you know, I think those two things are very important. I think Galaxy at times had had some presence in some of the schools early on. And I do know that some of the schools also have gay straight alliances in the community. Some of them don't have a gay straight alliance, but they have a diversity club that is inclusive of LGBT issues. So I think La Crosse has been kind of on the cutting edge of this, and I think that has to do with, I think some to do with the campuses, but also has to do with, you know, the YWCA and kind of taking a lead in regards to Galaxy. Now Galaxy is run through the LGBT Resource Center of the Seven Rivers region, and, you know, again, we're, you know, I think we're kind of a leader in that we have an LGBT center in our downtown, which is on Pearl Street, an area that is kind of has a lot of bars around it, and it amazes me that it can, you know, live down there and coexist with the bar community. But, you know, I think that, again, shows that there are a lot of progressive thinkers and people that, you know that LGBTQ folks are out here and are part of our world and need support, too. So I think that's pretty important.
Is there more education that could be push forward in the community?
I think we could do more in the schools. You know, the only time that we get called into the school or that Galaxy would be called into the school is usually when they have their diversity month or week, and that's once a year. You know, I know that the schools struggle to be inclusive of bringing us in because they have backlash from parents. And so, you know, I think, you know, they do the best that they can to get us in there. But, you know, there's when, you know, one of the local schools, you know, invited us and invited our awareness through performance troupe too. And, you know, we had to be a little careful with the scenes in awareness through performance that included LGBT issues. We had to maybe not be so heavy on those. And, you know, our students here say that that's ridiculous. Why? And it's, you know, because of, you know, a few people, usually not the majority. Sometimes I think it's only a couple people who complain and say, you know, you can't do this. And unfortunately, that I guess the schools must still feel, you know, that they can't and or fear of what might happen. I don't know. But I think if you would ask the students in the schools, they would say, you know, duh, I mean, we know all about this stuff. Why don't we give us good information? When I first started here, I went to a school district. They invited us for their diversity day. The first question that we were in this classroom, and the first group of students were sitting there, and I opened it up for questions, and an administrator doesn't even raise his hand, really. He just yells out this question from the back of the room, and he says, "Are you here to recruit?" And I, of course, I was new at this job. I was like, oh, my God, what did I bring my students into? It freaked me out. I was like, I don't know how to answer. The students were all looking at me like, what do we say? And, you know, I answered it, and we finished. We answered all the students' questions. And at the end, when those students were leaving to go to another session, and this was, you know, high school, many of those students in that classroom that witnessed that came up to us and said, "We're so sorry. Like, we don't understand why our parents and teachers don't get it. Like, we need this information. We have gay friends. We have, you know, gay relatives. Like, all we want is some good information, and nobody's talking to us." And, you know, for me, that was like, oh, you know, it's okay. But I think that stuff's still happening, you know, that the teachers can't talk about it in the schools, or the only person that can talk to a kid about LGBT issues is the social worker because they don't want the teachers talking. I mean, you know, those kind of ideas are old and are obsolete and, you know, really are not taking care of all students. You know, I don't know when that's going to change. It's slow. I mean, it is changing, but it's very slow. And it's not in time for the students that need it. I mean, students need this information, and they're just not getting it.
And with that lawsuit, Jamie, that every school district needed to require a safe learning environment for children, what happens if they don't?
Well, if they don't, the principals of the school, the administrators of the school, are personally held liable. And what that means is that they could actually lose their houses, they could lose savings accounts, because that personal liability is just that. And I think, and people say, well, isn't that a bad thing? And I say, no, most people would do the right thing, and so they don't have to worry about this. And most people can get umbrella policies on their homes that would cover this. It doesn't cost, they don't have to buy like a separate insurance like a doctor would. But ultimately, it comes down to, I mean, if somebody actually tries to protect a kid and does the right thing, they're not going to have to worry about it. It's for extreme situations like my situation where principals looked the other way and they basically said, we're not going to do anything, and they gave a green light. I mean, my middle school principal said in front of kids that were harassing me, and she said this to my parents at a meeting, that if I was going to be openly gay, I had to expect these kind of things to happen. Basically giving this green light to these kids that they could do whatever they want, and she wasn't going to do anything about it. And I do think that something that is changing, and I think it is changing slowly, but it's changing in a positive way, was that we now have the moral upper ground on this issue. I think we always have, but I think for so long people were afraid to assert that upper ground. And now the fact is that we do have kids in middle schools coming out. We have kids in high schools are coming out. And we need to talk about making the school a safe place for them, but giving them the information that they need, but also that their classmates need, to talk about issues not just of GLBT diversity, but all kinds of diversity. And I think for a long time, schools have been reluctant to do this, especially in small towns where they have a majority white population. They don't want to rock the boat. They kind of ignore these issues. They say, oh, we don't have an issue with racism. We don't have an issue with homophobia. Our school's okay. Well, the reality is they're having to confront these issues head on with the diversity that's happening with different races, different religions coming into the school, and then also kids coming out at a younger and younger age. And schools can't ignore this issue anymore. They're having to deal with this issue. And I think overall, they're doing a good job in trying to move forward. But it is the voices of a small minority of people that are saying, wait, you know, this isn't okay, and people are recruiting in schools. And prior to my film coming out, it was really funny because Focus on the Family came out with a statement, said that this film was going to be used as a recruitment tool for kids in schools. And my response to that was, if my film about what happened to me in school is an example of how great it is to come out in school, I don't think anyone has anything to worry about. I mean, it was kind of a ridiculous statement. And once they saw the film, they quit talking about it because they realized they don't have the moral upper ground on this issue. The reality is kids have a right to be safe in school. And I don't think safety is all. They need to also feel welcome. They need to also feel like they belong there and they're part of their community and not like outsiders. And I think that this issue is progressing. We had one of the most conservative school districts in the country in Anoka-Hennepin just decide that they were going to stop doing all that they've been doing to battle this. And it was mostly a parent group who remained anonymous and wouldn't identify their members, and a couple of school board members who were holding up an entire school district from moving forward. In the meantime, they have 11 schools with GSAs. They had 9 suicides in 2 years, some of which were bullying, some of which was GLBT. But regardless, they weren't dealing with the issues of bullying and harassment in their schools, and they certainly weren't dealing with the issues of GLBT kids. But it's happening. It's moving forward, and I think we're making progress. But unfortunately, how many kids are we going to lose while we're slowly moving along? We need to be moving faster, and we need to be doing more to make sure that kids are safe.
It seems like bullying has been getting more attention in the media lately. Do you think it's because it's just basic human evolution, or is it because people are finally being held accountable for their actions?
According to statistics, bullying hasn't increased, and neither have suicides. But what's increased is people are paying attention to these issues. And I think what happened in the fall of 2010 was all of a sudden people started paying attention to these issues and saying, wait a minute. And I think part of that is the advent of the internet. And all of a sudden kids are, you know, people are reading their Facebook pages after the fact and saying, wait, they were being harassed or bullied. Or why were they being harassed? People were out on the internet and they found out they were being harassed on the internet because of that. I remember when I was a child, there was a young person that killed themselves in my town, and I was a kid, and we never knew what happened. When I became an adult, I found out from one of his siblings, who was then an adult, that he killed himself because he was gay. Well, back then, people swept that under the rug. The family would never talk about it. They wouldn't want to deal with it. And now I think it's too hard for them not to. It's on the internet. It's everywhere. They have to acknowledge the fact that that was part of it. But I think that as we move forward and we're dealing with this issue, I think that 2010, both for bullying but also for GLBT rights, will be a pivotal moment. And the reason I say that is I think that for the majority of the country, they don't really care about gay rights. They don't really care what's happening. And I think that all of a sudden what happened was they might not care about the military. They may not care about marriage. But they can't sit there and turn on their TVs and say they don't care about kids in schools killing themselves because people are harassing them because of who they are. And I think in the same way that the media changed the civil rights movement by documenting and showing people on the nightly news what was happening, how these people were nonviolently protesting, being attacked with dogs, being attacked with water hoses, all of a sudden people got up and said, wait a minute, this isn't okay. This isn't America. This isn't the country I want to live in. And it changed things. And I think we're seeing that change. We're seeing now a majority of Americans believing that gay marriage is okay. We're seeing what we saw, the appeal of the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We're seeing a lot of progress in this. But because of that progress, there's the backlash. And that's spilling over into our schools.
Will, can you talk about ways that UWL or other universities or schools maybe take students' experiences and help them grow and be stronger because of them?
I think we do a couple things here really well. We have the Program Awareness Through Performance, or ATP, which is 20 students at the beginning of each semester that come together, it's a competitive process. And they come together, and before school starts, they start talking about, like, what kind of social justice issues would we like to put together in a show and show to the campus and the community. Basically, what it really has become is people telling their stories and sharing their experiences. And so you have a very diverse group of students, and then they put those into skits or vignettes or little movies that then become part of a bigger show and then are shown on campus. And for college students, you know, I think it's important that colleges have an LGBT center on campus or have a staff person or several staff people that this is what they do, working together with the other diversity offices on campus and trying to meet the needs of those students, many of which have come from places where they couldn't be out, or some of them, I mean, you were seeing more and more those that were out loud and proud, maybe since, you know, the beginning of high school or maybe even in middle school. Also seeing a lot of students who have LGBT parents, and maybe they weren't out in middle school and high school, but they've come to college and they're sick of hiding the fact that they have, you know, two moms or two dads. And so they need a place to feel comfortable, and an LGBT center can do that. But then we also provide lots of opportunities to do to have speakers come in to educate the campus in general.
Is there anything else the two of you would like to talk about? Jamie?
The one thing I think is that we have to keep in mind that we're moving forward. And I think it's hard to do in times like this when there seems to be a lot of negative things. And I'll give this example. When I was in school, I remember the day that I opened a textbook and was reading about that until 1967 in this country, two people of a different race couldn't marry. And I was shocked and I was appalled. And I do believe it's not too far in the future that there will be a kid right here in Wisconsin opening up a textbook and saying, up until 2000, whatever, gay people couldn't get married. I can't believe this. And I think that there will be people that look back at this time period and say, I don't understand what people were fighting about. This is just about people. People being who they are and being respected and living their lives out. That's all we want to do. And I think that we're moving forward and progress happens, and it happens too fast for some people and too slow for others, but it happens.
Jamie Nabuzny successfully sued the Ashland, Wisconsin school district in the mid-90s for the bullying he was subjected to. The landmark lawsuit holds school administrators more accountable for bullying. We were joined by UW La Crosse Pride Center Director Will Van Rosenbeek. You're listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and we'll talk about the scope of the problem and what's being done to prevent it. To hear this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. We also welcome your comments and ideas. Simply follow the links on our archives page at wpr.org/lacrosse.